Alright, what's up everybody? Welcome to My Hunting Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening as always. So this episode, we are doing another conservation news desk for the month of March. So not a lot of exciting stories this time around, but there may be a few controversial ones that we are going to cover today. But there are a couple things I want to make sure we cover before we get into the stories of this episode. So as always, if you enjoy this episode, make sure you hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, share this show with your friends, and head on over to mihuntingpodcast.com to check out the full array of content available, as well as, and if you really do enjoy the show, if you want to be able to support the show more directly, head on over to the Join Us button, become a member. Your membership supports this show directly. And while you're at the website, scroll down or head down to the giveaways page. You know, My Hunting Podcast has been up and running for, we're coming up on the 3-year mark this April. So to celebrate, I'm doing a giveaway. Yes, I'm finally doing a giveaway. It's something I've been wanting to do for a very long time to, be able to give back to those who, listen to the show, who support the show, and finally got around to getting some stuff together to be able to do that. Now, I will have links, posted out and, announcements throughout social media. But to get signed up, you head on over to mihuntingpodcast.com. You can either scroll down on the main page or hit the tab for the giveaway section. Has the items listed as well as the form to get entered in for that giveaway. So I'm pretty excited about this again, but I'm really happy with the items that I have available, especially one in particular. So let's go ahead and get into what is available for this giveaway. So the very first one that this is the part I'm most excited about, is a custom 662 Alpha Scout buck knife. This is courtesy from my friend Marcus with Way of Knife. He has a knife shop, locally in town here. And they offer a lot of different types of knives and do a lot of custom work. So I'm pretty excited. Again, this is American-made buck knife. What Marcus did was end up doing a topographical design on the blade itself. It looks really sharp. Super excited about it. I'm actually a little disappointed that I'm going to be giving this knife away and not being able to keep it for myself. Now, I may, end up having to, talk to Marcus and have another one made just for my own personal use here. Again, with this being a buck knife, it is a very pretty knife, but also is going to be one that you can use in the field. Some pretty good quality steel that's going to have great edge retention. Again, when we're using these knives out in the field, we're not the best at, being careful with them. So we do get into some bone. A lot of times we end up dropping them in the dirt and whatnot. So this knife will hold up to usage in the field, or if you want to keep it as just a souvenir or something to keep, on the shelf as a display item. So that's the first item. Also going to be throwing in a pack of your choice of any vantage point archery broadheads. They typically come in a 3-pack. You get to pick on the broadhead style that you want, as well as the weight of those broadheads. So whatever fits your current arrow setup, you will get a pack of those. Again, you get to pick on what style of broadhead. So if you want 2-blade, 3-blade, single bevel, whatever, you get to pick. Also going to throw in some of my own merchandise here. You get an MI Hunting premium hoodie, grocery deer tee, MI Hunting Podcast hat, and then probably going to throw in a few stickers to boot. So this giveaway starts on April 1st, and the winner is announced on May 1st. So to get signed up, again, head on over to mihuntingpodcast.com, enter your name and email, and you are automatically entered for that giveaway. All right, so again, we've got a few stories to cover here. Let's not delay anymore and head on over to the Conservation News Desk. right, so this first story comes from the Wildlife Society, published on March 21st. U.S. House of Representatives passes Wild Act. Bill would fund several wildlife conservation programs domestically and abroad. The U.S. House of Representatives recently passed the Wild Restoration Act, a bipartisan effort to utilize funding for several wildlife and habitat conservation programs. Across all 50 states, U.S. territories, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service partners for fish and wildlife program officers, critical support of voluntary conservation initiatives, various organizations including landowners, tribes, and nonprofit interested in providing and improving habitat can apply for free technical and financial assistance through the program. Has made possible more than 50,000 projects, including the restoration and management of 6 million acres of forest, prairie, wetlands, and stream habitats since 1987. The Wildlife Society supported sustained funding for the Partners of Fish and Wildlife Program, demonstrating a commitment to collaborative federal conservation efforts. So basically what these are is, if you've ever seen them, they're basically, you can submit for a grant. So if you have a certain wildlife project, you can submit for an application for a grant for some of that funding, and then they can go through the process of reviewing it. Now, I've never tried it for, if you're, a private landowner and you just want to, get some money to do some, mountain habitat work on your own, hunting property or something like that. I don't know if that's something that they would grant you. Again, I know there's some stipulations a lot of times of, how you manage it, how you go about, completing those projects. So there is some regulation involved. Sometimes it may not be the necessarily the best thing to do to get, the federal government involved in how you manage your hunting property. But if you do have, a large parcel that you are looking to do any sort of project with, just for the sole purpose of, improving habitat, not necessarily for, hunting purposes, but just in general, or if you're part of an organization, this could be an avenue to get some funding in that regard. The Multinational Species Conservation Fund play a pivotal role in supporting conservation of imperiled species globally, including iconic wildlife such as rhinos, elephants, tigers, great apes, and marine turtles. And over the 30 years since its inception, the Multinational Species Conservation Fund has been incrementally successful tool in strengthening global wildlife conservation, helping conserve our planet's most iconic and beloved wildlife species, said Rep. Debbie Dingell. She goes on to say, I'm glad to see the Wild Act pass the House to ensure that we continue this important work to protect these species for generations to come. The United States is actively involved in global conservation initiatives aimed at protecting endangered species and preserving biodiversity. Through partnership with other countries, the United States contributes to conservation efforts in regions facing significant biodiversity threats, such as Amazon rainforest and coral reefs of the Pacific Ocean. The provisions of the Wild Act align with the goals of these global objectives and demonstrate the U.S. commitment to international wildlife conservation efforts. The Wildlife Society has long advocated for the importance of endangered species recovery, recognizing the vital role threatened and endangered species play in maintaining healthy ecosystems. The commitment is evident through our position statement on the conservation biological diversity, as well as an issue statement addressed the U.S. Endangered Species Act policy briefing and the Species at Risk Act, which highlight our dedication to supporting international and endangered species recovery efforts. They go on to say the next step of the Wild Act lies in the Senate, where it undergo further review and consideration. And then they close it out with the Wild Act enables the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to promote voluntary conservation here at home, while also ensuring the United States remains a global leader in protecting some of the world's most beloved species. He emphasized the bill's significance in maintaining the nation's commitment to domestic and global wildlife conservation efforts. So, you know, it's good to see that, you know, as much as, you know, Congress and whatnot don't agree on a lot of things, at least they still are putting effort into two of these projects that provide, you know, funding for habitat work, you know, for wildlife. Now, you know, you can talk about, you know, government overspending on the federal level and, you know, sending this money abroad as to, are we ensuring that the money that's being sent out globally is going to the resources that we are intending them to? You know, again, you can get into a lot of the weeds of talking about, you know, that type of topic where in regards to how that money is being spent and ensuring that it is going to what it's supposed to. You know, and this does kind of bring up, you know, kind of reminds me of previous administrations that, you know, were so focused on, you know, certain initiatives, you know, protecting certain wildlife by banning hunting, you know, especially in regards to trophy hunting, if you would, you know, permit me to use that term. But, you know, the one thing that I think a lot of times gets missed is that, you know, hunting opportunities and the licensing and the amount of money generated from hunting that goes back into conservation wildlife, protecting wild animals, you know, that is something that gets missed a lot by a lot of our representatives as well as from the general public. You know, the idea that you're going to protect so many animals by banning hunting when, you know, especially overseas, you know, we've seen, you know, the exact opposite where the moment that, you know, the incentive to be able to go out to do these safaris, to hunt, you know, in other countries and not being able to bring back, you know, bring back your trophy or bring back the animal, you know, it really cut down on the amount of people that were willing to go out and hunt, especially in regards to some of the high profile, you know, social media attention that, you know, was really negative for a lot of people. You know, a lot of these, you know, hunting reserves and wildlife reserves that allowed hunting basically had to get shut down because they didn't get the funding anymore because the hunters weren't showing up anymore. They, you know, lost their revenue, which a lot of these organizations and a lot of these hunting groups would spend, you know, mass amounts of money for anti-poaching, you know, patrols and, you know, just protecting the wildlife that has a significant value to them monetarily. These companies would get shut down. These hunting reserves would get shut down. And then the animals will be wiped out from poachers because they, you know, the governments of the areas didn't have the resources or the motivation to protect the animals. Whereas these private individuals that would run these, you know, groups, when they had the funding, they were very adamant of protecting the animals in their areas and ensuring that they had good numbers and that they were healthy. That way they could always have clientele come back. That's one thing that I think a lot of times gets missed, especially, again, outside the hunting world. Us as hunters, we know a lot of this already and know the importance of hunting and the money that's generated from hunting that goes towards the animals that we love to pursue. I think there needs to be a bit of a push to, you know, bring that to the forefront that, you know, hunting is also a very, very important resource in regards to, you know, protecting wildlife essentially. But interesting story. We'll see what happens in the Senate. You know, I don't foresee any significant reason why there would be anyone that's really against this. You know, in a political sense, it's kind of a win-win that you're, you know, you don't want to be the one that goes against, you know, it gets labeled as the person that's against protecting wildlife, essentially. All right, let's get into this next story. This is from the Citizens Times from March 5th. North Carolina black bear deer hunting seasons passed despite public disapproval. in its February 2022 meeting, North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission voted to adopt proposed rule changes for the upcoming season, including a measure that would significantly expand the length of bear hunting in the mountain region. The commission voted to adopt a total of 36 changes to regulations after making a few amendments. The newly approved Wildlife Commission rules include adjustments to the bear and deer seasons, as well as reclassification what it means to be hunting under the influence. Governing body, which requires get public comment, and any regulation change, received over 1,400 responses and over 650 comments for the proposed changes, according to spokesperson Anna Gurney. The bear hunting expansion, which will add 9 days to season and create Saturday openers for the two segments, was met with the most public input by a landslide, with 69% of the 646 saying that they do not support the change. There's a quote here that says, "It is not surprising whatsoever that the Wildlife Commission went ahead and adopted these proposals," said Bill Lee. Yeah. A retired U.S. Forest Service employee and bear photographer over 30 years. And he goes on to say, they have to get public input, but they don't have to listen. So what concerns were raised? So again, you know, typically I'm generally in favor of extending hunting seasons and, you know, providing more opportunity to people. But there are some drawbacks to, especially in this instance, that, you know, going forward for, you know, other states and regulations that you should take in consideration in regards to, you know, conflicts between hunters. So many of the public comments raised potential issues having an overlap of bear and deer hunting during the second segment of the bear seasons. Some suggested this will lead to bear dogs being shot and illegal taking of deer using bear dogs, less opportunity for youth hunters to bag a deer, and even violent disputes. So again, looking at it, that's what the big concern is that though now you have the bear hunting seasons and the you know, part of their main hunting deer season is overlapped now. So the opening of gun season on Thanksgiving week has been the standing tradition for young hunters who are out of school and hunt with adults in rifle season. One anonymous public commenter wrote, "The change of season where deer and bear hunting collide would lead to either running a deer with dogs or bear dogs being shot by deer hunters." Brad Stanbeck, a District 9 commissioner, the District 9 commissioner for the most western part, told the Citizen Times March 4th that the season overlap issue would mostly a trade-off between concern of bear hunters and deer hunters, making it impossible to please both sides. When it happens, Stanbeck said, the move gives more credence to the commission biologist's recommendations. So Stanbeck highlighted how the two seasons have overlapped in other parts of the state for years with no conflicts. He also said that they received comments from bear hunters stating that they don't see any potential conflict because bear hunters typically stay more remote areas than deer hunters. A lot of the disapproved comments came from the outside of District 9, and a substantial number of them were from anti-hunters who did not want to see bear hunting happening at all. Stanbeck said, their concerns seem to be more political issue than would be taken up by the NC General Assembly rather than a wildlife management issue to the jurisdiction of the NC Wildlife Resource Commission. So that's an interesting, you know, twist that, you know, I probably should have seen coming from, you know, within this story, is that a lot of the, I guess the outcry is from anti-hunting groups. You know, if that's truly is the case, I'm not surprised in that instance. You know, bear hunting across the country has had, you know, significant, you know, pressure from anti-hunting groups to, you know, cut back on bear hunting, you know, limit the, you know, game ways of take, baiting, running with dogs, you know, that type of thing. They are just trying to, pick away at bear hunting across the country. So it is interesting that he makes this comment that a lot of the anti-hunting individuals are the ones that are most, up in arms about the bear hunting. Again, I do see that there could be some potential for, some of the, dispute. But again, there are a lot of areas that do have, a little bit of overlap. Here in the state of Michigan, the second part of the bear hunting season is during the archery season as well. So, there is some overlap here in our state as well in regards to the bear hunting and deer hunting. And then the story goes on to say, what exactly are the changes that are being made. So the start date of deer gun season will remain as proposed, changing from the traditional Monday before Thanksgiving to Saturday after Thanksgiving in western North Carolina counties. However, the amendment will allow youth hunters under the age of 18 to deer hunt on Thanksgiving Day and the Friday after. All right, so as a deer hunter, I would be upset about, having changes to where I wasn't able to hunt, during the week of Thanksgiving and had to hunt after. I'd be upset about that if I was a deer hunter. Black bear hunting will be expanded by 9 days in October with Saturday openers as proposed instead of the beginning of Mondays as the season traditionally has. And depending on the specific location, the second segment will start on Saturday after Thanksgiving and run through the beginning of January. Bear hunters will also be able to use unprocessed bait during the second segment of the mountain bear season. Sandbag goes on to say, previously told by Citizen Times, the bear population in the mountains is growing 7% each year. The growing population is causing problems such as roadkill becoming a major source of mortality. And he goes on to say, the longer bear season will probably result in more bears being taken and certain percentage of them will be pregnant females, time I said. But the extension of the bear season in this first segment, pregnant females tend to den earlier than males, but that would only impact the second segment of the bear season. Before these new rules become in effect, August 1st, it will be filed with the Office of Administrative Hearing to go on before the NC Rules Review Commission for approval, according to Gurney. So I guess lastly, too, according, from what it sounds like from Wildlife Resources side is that they are really wanting to, get some more bears taken off the landscape. And again, he mentions that they have a 7% increase, which, each year that's a pretty significant growth. Basically, last I kind of heard is that, if a bear population is kind of left at its own accord, it'll generally grow at a 10% rate. And that's, not taking hunting into consideration if there's no hunting in the area. If they're just left to their own devices, it's about 10%. So they are seeing still a significant growth in their bear numbers, which again, if they're in increasing number of, like they said in the story here of, bears getting hit on the roadways, you're going to have an increased number of problem bears just because of the higher density. So I get the idea of trying to increase the bear season to, boost harvest numbers. But again, as a deer hunter, I would be upset about, shortening the deer season. But interesting nonetheless on what their stance is and how they went about, making these decisions, even with a significant number of, individuals that voiced their opinion against it. Again, sounds like some of the anti-hunters groups or individuals, weighed in. All right, so let's jump into this next story. So this is from the Detroit Free Press from March 15th. Coyote hunting now banned in Michigan for 3 months while pups are still in den. All right, so let's get into it. Coyote hunting is now prohibited in Michigan for 3 months out of the year when pups are in den and still dependent on their parents. The Michigan Department of Natural Resources Commission voted to close the coyote hunting season from April 15th through July 15th. the 4-2 vote Thursday followed a day of testimony from fur bear trappers, hunters, and animal rights groups. Here we go. The Michigan United Conservation Clubs opposed the shortening seasons, saying there's no significant evidence that Michigan's cow population would be harmed or helped by the proposal. But the Humane Society of the United States, supported the closing the season when pups aren't then, saying the killing of cows in late spring generally increased the chance of pups being orphaned, leading to a slow death of starvation, according to a memo to the commission from the Humane Society. So, again, this Humane Society of the United States is not the Humane Society that runs, you know, local, you know, animal shelters. You know, that they are completely separate. They're not aligned at all. The Humane Society of the United States is very much a anti-hunting group, full stop. You know, none of their resources that they accumulate go to any local shelters for anything like that. So the local Humane Society that you have for, you know, adopting cats and dogs and whatnot, not the same organization. Don't get them flip-flopped or don't get them confused at all. B. Fredlander, a lawyer with Attorneys for Animals, a tax-exempt advocacy and educational base organization based in Canton, said allowing coyote hunting year-round reflected the attitude of coyotes are a nuisance and don't deserve to live. He also spoke before the commission votes Thursday on behalf of the advocacy group organizations and animal law section of the State Bar of Michigan. She said restrictions of the hunting season would reduce the number of dead cows and their orphaned pups. She goes on to say, we supported what was before the Natural Resources Commission. It was not a question of do we open coyote hunting or not. Ed Golder, a spokesman for the Michigan Department of Resources, said the groups that advises the DNR on fur bears recommend cutting the season short due to concerns about public perception about coyotes being harvested while pups are still in the den before they're weaned, have learned to hunt on their own, and become independent. Which, again, this gets into a little bit more of a topic that I'm going to get into further down later in the story here. The adversary group membership is predominantly comprised of hunters, trappers, and fur bears, a group of mammals that include coyotes, badgers, beavers, foxes, and otters. Michigan United Conservation Club, with its 40,000 members, said decision to justify a shortened season made without scientific evidence. Now enacted, it will make the fight to defend lethal wildlife management much harder. Again, gets into it again with the Humane Society. Whenever the Humane Society of the United States get involved, you know that their ultimate goal is full out banning of hunting of whatever they're fighting. Conservation Club said that in the release that the commission who voted for the measure based their decisions on perceived social pressures, shirking their responsibility and legal charge to follow sound scientific management. But Golder said that the commission considers several factors when making decisions about wildlife, the science, as well as social, economic, and political impacts. All right, so this gets into the social science, economic, and political impacts. Those, like the political impacts and the social, should really have no say, or at least be like way down on the list in regards to what your management decisions are. So according to the Humane Society, indiscriminate year-round killing of cows will not reduce populations and actually encourage more breeding. Indiscriminate and random killing of coyotes, the coyote killing removes the ecologically important species from the landscape, the society said in a memo to the commission. Wait a minute. So initially they said that it does not reduce populations and actually encourages more breeding. But then they go on to say that removes them from the landscape. Hold on, which is it? Does it play no impact on the population, or does it impact the population? Which are you saying? You can't have both. Yeah, according to Humane Society, indiscriminate year-round killing of cows will not reduce their populations and actually encourage more breeding. And then the very next sentence, indiscriminate and random killing of cows removes an ecological important species from the landscape. Huh. Do they even hear themselves? Cows, it said, helps control disease transmission by keeping rodent populations in check. Oh, also remove sick animals from gene pool and protect crops and gardens. Oh my gosh, really? Oh, so another tropic cascade effect by having coyotes on the landscape. They fix everything. And then they go back, year-round limitless coyote killing does not reduce their numbers, increase population of game species like deer, and does not prevent conflicts with livestock. Said Jeff Fritz, Senior Director of Wildlife Protection at the Humane Society, in an interview with the Free Press. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and get into this, or year-round hunting of coyotes. You know, really, a lot of the science does say that, you know, you can hunt coyotes year-round unless you're really going after them and hammering hard. Year-round, you're not going to make a significant impact on the coyote population as a whole. You know, if you harvest a couple of coyotes in your area, good likelihood that others are going to move into the area. These basically the satellite coyotes move in. But the thing that really gets me about this is the timing. So they're concerned about that, you know, April to July time frame. And that coincides right with the nesting period of turkeys and other ground nesting, you know, I'm assuming other ground nesting birds, as well as the dropping of fawns for deer. So, you know, deer, you know, for especially here in the state of Michigan, our deer population is, you know, pretty darn high, especially in certain parts of the state. Now, the UP, you know, that's a whole different story. Here in the northern lower, you know, we have a decent population, but downstate, they have a significant population of deer. So the idea that, you know, taking coyotes off the landscape during the time of fawns being dropped, if you're in the state of Michigan, it's not, you know, it is going to help. So if your area, if you're concerned about having, you know, your fawns survive, then yes, hunting coyotes this time, you know, during that time frame when fawns are dropping, doing that targeted, you know, removal of coyotes during that time frame has been shown to be able to, you know, help those animals out. Bigger picture, you know, is turkeys. You know, there has been significant, you know, concern within the state as well as across the country of the turkey populations not doing all that great. There's a lot of areas are seeing a decline in turkey populations. You know, a lot of that has to do kind of for multiple reasons, but usually it comes down to poor habitat and increased predators, which the poor habitat makes it easier for the, you know, predators to find the turkey nest and prey on them. You know, in effort to help save, you know, turkeys who are, you know, we are seeing a decline in their numbers and people are very concerned about the future of turkeys, you know, within the state as well as across the country, you know, doing a targeted coyote hunt, you know, while, you know, even, you know, in the time frame of, you know, turkeys nesting will help save a lot of turkeys by removing those coyotes from the area in the time frame until, you know, those nesting periods are over and potentially a lot of those, you know, poults are, you know, old enough or big enough where they can fly and get off the ground and be safe from those ground predators. So the idea that, you know, you're going to save a few coyote pups, even though they keep making the argument that it makes no effect on the population by hunting them, but yet they're concerned about coyotes dying. But then in the same breath, not considering the other impacts that having these coyotes on the landscape during that time frame. again, you know, a lot of people are not, you know, year-round coyote hunters. They're not going after coyotes, you know, necessarily at a, you know, at a high enough pace that they are going to make a significant impact on the population. But just completely disregarding this idea that, you know, doing targeted, you know, control of coyotes during this time frame is not going to be beneficial to other animals as well. You know, that's the thing that gets me about this decision, that it seems like there's no consideration of that at all. Michigan has year-round coyote hunting since 2016. During their 5-minute before commission meeting, Thursday Fritz said she focused on the following: wildlife in Michigan is held in trust for all Michigan residents. The commission chairman said that the rest of the commission took input from hunters who supported a quiet season, hunters who opposed the animal rights activists. His conclusion: the quiet season would have no impact on coyote population or populations of their prey like deer that would have a minimal impact on coyote hunting opportunities. See, again, I would love to have asked him what he thought about the idea of this targeted time frame to protect deer fawns and turkeys. Besides, their pelts are bad in condition at the time and they're not hunted for food. But if you have a reason to target them during the time frame because you're worried about other wildlife, you just completely, you know, cut them at the knees to be able to use it as a tool to help protect these other species. Further, the quiet season does not limit the right of property owners to hunt nuisance coyotes on their land. So, again, I guess I'll have to go back into it and see what he's talking about here. That this quiet season, so if you're able to hunt them still on private land, I didn't know anything about this quiet season, or if they approved it or not. So there'll be more. I'll have to look into that more. But it sounds like, to my understanding, it was an all out ban that you can't hunt them anywhere during that time frame. So I guess I'll have to look into that a little bit more in depth. But I'm disappointed with their decision that they're looking to try to save some coyotes when their own arguments state that the coyote population would not be affected one way or the other if they continued hunting them. And yet, the idea that there's no benefit to hunting them during this time frame. So again, it seems mostly that it's just been a, you know, public perception and anti-hunting groups coming down on the on coyote hunting because they were trying to get rid of hunting in general, or the hunting of coyotes, when as a management tool, as, you know, the coyote population is not, you know, threatened or endangered or, you know, scarce in any means. So as overall management of the wildlife and the habitat, you know, taking this time frame out does not help the ecosystem at all, doesn't help the overlying, you know, management of, you know, of the resource. And again, I would make the argument that is a detriment to, you know, other species that are, you know, that are having a harder time, and, you know, that there are concerns about their numbers. So, but I'm going to get off my soapbox on this one, and we will move on to the last story here. So this last story is not necessarily, you know, that strong of an argument in regards to conservation news, but it kind of tickled my fancy a little bit when I saw it, that several states are issuing state of emergencies in regards to the upcoming solar eclipse, based on the number of people that will be coming to these areas to see the event. So this is from Live Now from Fox, published on March 22nd. So several states and some Texas counties that will be in the path of the totality during the April solar eclipse have issued warnings and state of emergencies ahead of the event. So far, several counties counties in Texas have issued official declarations, while states like Oklahoma, Indiana, Ohio, Missouri, New York, and Kentucky have alerted residents to be prepared ahead of the upcoming eclipse. Several counties in Kentucky were even opting to close school for the day. Residents who live in the area that will be highly trafficked during the eclipse have been advised to stock up on food and gas and other essential supplies as they prepare for the influx of visitors to witness the once-in-a-lifetime event. All right, Ohio. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine signed executive order which directs all state departments and agencies to be ready and prepared to ensure the health and safety of residents and visitors. Safety and well-being in Ohioans is always on the forefront of everything we do. We have been preparing for April 8th solar eclipse for several years to ensure this once-in-a-lifetime event can be safe and memorable for all. Ohio officials also said that there could be potential for interruptions in cell service and strongly urged travelers to have a paper map to help them navigate. Indiana officials said traffic will be a major concern and encourage any visitors to stay in place after the eclipse has taken place to avoid any severe traffic jams. In Oklahoma, state officials estimate that there would be an influx of anywhere between 17,000 to 66,000 visitors to watch the event. And the additional two possible traffic jams, Oklahoma officials said that it would be best for residents to schedule errands and appointments 2 to 3 days before the eclipse. And I did also, you know, run into an article that, I'm not going to pull this one up, but basically that the, you know, around Niagara Falls area too, that they're looking at potentially seeing a million visitors over the course of the event, whereas they typically only see about 14 million year round during the event. So they're actually very concerned about that too, around certain, you know, around that monument. So an estimated 44 million live inside the 150-mile wide path of the totality stretch. North America won't experience the totality again until 2033, with Alaska getting sole dibs. It's not until 2044 when the totality will confine Western Canada, Montana, and North Dakota. Again, not really conservation related, but it's going to be an interesting time this next week, as with the eclipse happening and all the to-do that's going to go around it. Again, if you're going out to see this event in some of the, you know, somewhere in the path of where you're going to see the totality, I guess the eclipse part of it, you know, again, do be careful out there with your travels. And just be patient and take your time, you know, getting there and getting back home again. So, again, just basically being safe with it. All right, so that's it for these conservation stories for this month. You know, again, there's a couple of them that, you know, are kind of interesting that, you know, you could dispute one way or the other in regards to the bear hunting versus deer hunting argument. You know, again, you know, as a deer hunter and someone that's potentially going to be bear hunting here in the next couple of years, you know, I can see an argument for both. Now, as a deer hunter primarily, I would be a little upset about the shortening of the season. In regards to the House bill, you know, again, I'm generally in favor of, you know, putting more resources to, you know, habitat work and protecting wildlife, as long as you can track and ensure that those funds are being utilized to support those, you know, those animals and those wildlife projects. In regards to the coyote hunting, again, I'm kind of disappointed in their decision and their, you know, rationale in making that decision. Again, they need to follow the North American model of conservation using sound management science, listening to the biologists, and, you know, looking at the resource as to what's best for the resource itself, not, you know, I get the taking the social aspect in consideration, but that should not be the deciding factor of that decision. And then again, not necessarily conservation newsworthy, but the solar eclipse, again, is going to be an event that, again, our family is actually taking a trip to Ohio to see that. This is something that my wife has had, you know, her eyes on for over the year now, of wanting to go do. So, you know, a little bit of concern on my aspect of, you know, dealing with the fact that I didn't, I guess, anticipate that there's going to be this much publicity about it, and that there was going to be a lot of other people that kind of wanted to do the same thing and go to these areas. You know, I should, probably should have thought about that more. But so we are going to, you know, partake in being part of the problem in that regard of traveling down to Ohio to see this eclipse. So it will be an event one way or the other. It'll be good for the kids to, you know, see something like that. And I know it's something that my wife has been looking forward to, so we're going to go ahead and dive into it and, you know, take that trip. But that's it for these stories for the month. So again, if you did enjoy this episode, make sure you hit that like button. And if you have any stories that you think are something that you would like to see covered on the Conservation News Desk, you can forward any links to any of my social media accounts on Facebook, Instagram, on X, or you can email directly at mihunting@mihuntingpodcast.com, and in the subject line, add Conservation News Desk. And with that, we're going to wrap up this episode. So as always, get out there, be safe, and have fun.